Welcome back to 60 Miles from Anywhere. My name's Clinton Harris, and tonight I'm going to talk about a story that I remembered the other night about this guy. It's called The Freelancer. If you like this episode, please check out my website, 60milesfromanywhere.com, where you'll find more stories on my blog as well as insights about creative writing. My fiction is available on Amazon.com, and you can find the link on my website. The book is called Song of the Cinder, and it's available in both trade paperback and ebook for Kindle. It makes a great gift for that lover of fantasy, alternate history, or horror in your life. Your donation to support this podcast and my website are always appreciated by clicking on the Buy Me a Coffee link. Be sure to leave a rating or a comment on the platform you're subscribed to. Ratings and comments help improve my rankings on platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, and many others. I'm also an affiliate with Origin USA, a company that makes boots, jeans, martial arts gear, and all sorts of other things that are 100% American-made. Click on the link on my website and use code HARRIS10 for 10% off your next purchase. All content is written, recorded, and produced by me, Clinton A. Harris. If you're interested in working with me for podcasting, writing, or other projects, please contact me through the links on my website, 60milesfromanywhere.com. Let's get started. A few years ago, I was meeting with some friends to talk about writing. We met at the local Starbucks a couple blocks away from the neighborhood. I hate Starbucks. Not only do they fuck up your name on the cup, no matter if your name is Jim, Tammy, Bob, or Cheryl, I think they're sadists and do it to amuse themselves. We got a seat outside because it was spring, and in Colorado, when the trees start to even get a hint of buds, you want to start spending as much time as possible outside. My writing friends had set up camp at a wire table outside as I stood in line waiting to pick up my coffee. On the odd occasion that the barista actually made conversation with me, this was a tall, lanky college kid pouring my Americano. Danger was written on the cup. It's the same name that comes up on my caller ID if I'm calling you, just so you know. He asked what we were up to outside, and I explained we were chatting about our writing projects. He informed me that he was also a writer. That's fine. I'm not going to gatekeep something that anyone with enough patience to sit through their own self-doubt and loathing can do if they just set their mind to it. But something he said stuck with me. He asked me what I wrote. Since I was making the transition from being a part-time freelance writer to likely full-time once the university completely spun out of control and had to start laying people off to make sure that upper management got to keep their trips to Thailand while underpaying faculty and staff, I told him I wrote content for websites for pay, but I was also writing a book. As he poured the 3 shots of espresso into my cup and topped it off with hot water, he said, "Oh, really? That's great. I'm more of a freelance writer myself. I don't like writing things for other people. I like to tell my own stories." Now, with the confidence of youth mixed with oblivion, he handed me my cup. I went to sugar and cream, ripped off the top of the 3 cane sugar packets that I had been holding and shaking to pack the ingredients down into one side like some nervous cokehead with an 8-ball. I put a splash of warm half and half in and went outside to join my friends. One of them was the daughter of my neighbors, whom I had known for many years. She was in her early 20s and thinking about writing a book. She had heard that I was a writer and had written a fantasy novel. That's the one I plug shamelessly at the beginning of every podcast. At the time, I was working on another book set in the same world with even more airships and monsters and ghosts and gods walking the earth. When she explained the world of her book that she had built, I almost felt ashamed at what I had been working on. She was describing mythologies and social structures, race relations, and all sorts of stuff. Our third was a mutual friend I also met through her parents. He was writing too, even though he recently found out that he was probably not going to be able to work on the book long. He would be leaving the country soon. His cancer had come back, and his prognosis was not good. He was trying to decide whether or not to continue fighting the cancer that had metastasized throughout his body, or go to Japan for some radical treatments. Our little writing group had exactly one meeting before life got in the way for all three of us, and we went our separate ways. My friend decided to continue fighting cancer and went to Japan for over a year. I followed his Facebook page whenever I could, and he would describe the treatments they were giving cancer patients over there. Whenever somebody tells me the United States has the best healthcare in the world, with one of the worst systems of delivery, they clearly haven't heard anything the Japanese are doing. Robots, lasers, homeopathic treatments, lifestyle changes, therapy. His prognosis of just a few months of life has turned into over 4 years since going to Japan. My other friend got married, moved away with her husband. They are young and adorable and doing well. I don't know if she's still working on the book. Now, the moment that really stuck with me, with such clarity that I could really question my mental health about this, I can remember the face of that barista as clearly as if I had just seen him pour my coffee yesterday. Even then, in the writer's meeting, what he said bothered me. I'm freelance. I thought of the wisdom of Inigo Montoya, who said, "You keep using this word. I do not think this word means what you think it means." As I listened to Angie explain her world building, what would honestly be the next big Netflix series, and tiptoed around Matthew's story, who at the time we thought was dying in front of our eyes, that long-necked, skinny, giant Adam's appled guy had gotten under my skin. Freelance. No. When I write content for a dentist that talks about the importance of flossing and regular visits for pay, that's freelance work. When I write about traumatic brain injuries for attorneys' blogs, that's freelance. If I get hired for a story that I've pitched about traveling out to Oregon with my kid and my mom, that's freelance. I'm hiring myself out to someone who is willing to give me money for my words. Much like a knight of old, with no ties to a lord or vassal, and he would take his horse and lance and ride off to distant lands to hire himself and his lance out to someone who wanted to pay him for his services of chopping serfs to pieces was a free lance. This kid was getting the free part confused, because when you write for yourself and nobody is paying you, you're a writer, but you aren't doing freelance work. Freelancing is a different kind of critter. Freelancing involves doing a lot of things that you'd rather not be doing. You'd rather be constructing amazing worlds with plot lines like Angie was doing, or later with Matthew explaining the sci-fi levels of treatment he was getting in Japan to put his cancer back into remission. The freelance work that I was doing was writing about grill guards on 4x4 trucks or product descriptions for a boating catalog. It wasn't what I wanted to do. Writing the book about fighting a continental land war in North America during the beginning of the 20th century, or the return of the Fae and how it clashed with the Industrial Revolution, was what I was working on. The freelance work was a lot more like work than writing. More like a job, really. But it was still writing. What he wanted to do wasn't freelancing. It was just writing. Or probably just telling people he was writing so he could hang out with other college students who were writing and making bad student films, but mostly smoking a lot of shitty weed and drinking like they were on the second coming of William S. Burroughs, making out with artsy girls who didn't shave their armpits, or getting invited to house parties that have one inexplicably present faculty member who everybody says is cool, but nobody's leaving an unattended drink around for the shifty motherfucker either. I know I shouldn't get worked up about it, but I did, and I still am. Writing is work, but freelancing is a job. So make it into a career. It's a good way to pay the bills while you work on your passion project. You usually don't get to come up with the topics out of whole cloth. They're given to you because a customer needs you to write what they generally suck at. Here's something else about writing you should know. Everyone who is a speaker, a native speaker of English, constructs sentences, they talk to people, and they convey their thoughts with their native tongue. When I used to tell people I was an English major, they looked at me funny, like, "Don't you already speak English?" Yes. Yes, I do. But studying English, and particularly writing things in English, is different. I'm not saying you need an English degree to be a writer. No way. The other day, I paid $4 from Thrift Books for a 50th anniversary copy of Strunken White's Elements of Style. It's a thin little book that pretty much explains just about everything you'd ever want to know about writing mechanics. Not writing to mechanics that are fixing your car, but the nuts and bolts of what makes writing, writing. I wish they would have handed these things out freshman year in high school. This book removes all the mysteries of lay versus lie and that whole there bullshit. It explains everything that messes you up every time you have to write something and you aren't sure you're getting the grammar right. $4. I could have saved thousands of dollars in tuition for an English degree. That usually gets an eyebrow raise from prospective employers who invariably ask, "Don't you already speak English?" If you want to be a writer, sit down and just start writing. It's going to suck. That's a hard pill for me to swallow anyway. I'm such a perfectionist when it comes to my writing. You wouldn't know I was a perfectionist by looking at the rest of my house. My kitchen's trashed most of the time. My bed's never made. There's stuff on the floor. I have wrappers and mailers and all sorts of stuff just laying all over the place. It's hard to adhere to that mantra of don't put it down, put it away. It is a hard pill to swallow, knowing it's not going to be perfect. That little black book of Strunken White helps with the basics, and things like figuring out my own voice, how to create characters and lived-in worlds, and all the rest are the domain of the writers. Freelancing is a little different. You aren't living in your worlds. You're taking what you know about being able to do what everyone else can do, which is putting words together, and you're doing it just a little bit better than they could. Sometimes much better than they could. I've met a lot of people with MBAs who couldn't write their way out of a wet paper bag. I've read briefs from dentists and lawyers who wouldn't know subject verb agreement well enough to save their lives if they depended on it. It sounds a little hyperbolic, but good content can help a business. Nobody wants to read something your seventh grader scribbled out at the last minute in a mandatory journal entry for English class in middle school. Not if it's representing their business, services, and know-how anyway. So freelancers use their skills. They use experience with grammar and a finely honed ability to sit down with some of the driest bullshit you've ever encountered to try to sell it as if something interesting and informative is in front of them. No, what he was talking about was just writing for himself. It wasn't freelancing. It wasn't talking about toothpaste or pocket knives or terms and conditions agreements for pay for somebody else who would probably think, as they sent out their 1099s for the year, "Boy, that guy was expensive. I speak English. I could probably do it myself next time and save a lot of money. How hard could it be?" Well, today I sat down and wrote about uterine cancer and hair relaxer lawsuits. I would have much preferred writing on my book, but right now the book isn't going to pay my child support or put food in my fridge. Neither is this podcast. I'm hoping both of those things will eventually change and I won't have to write as much copy for websites and I can focus on my dream writing jobs. Travel writing, working on the novels, just telling the stories I want to tell. But no, for now I'm selling my wares just about to any bidder that'll take them. My talent of knowing where to put the commas and dazzling the rubes with the M dashes and the semicolons. I'm selling my ability to research something I would probably never research on my own and transposing the ideas into information for other people. Some freelancing is a lot more creative. Writing articles for magazines gives you a lot more control. You pitch something you like to an editor. An editor. Gosh, that's like a tongue twister. You wouldn't believe how many times I've stopped and re-recorded that sentence. You pitch something you like to an editor. They might like what you've got, or they owe a mutual friend a favor and decide to give you a shot. They might want more of your stuff. They pay pretty well, but not as frequently as writing copy. Those kinds of assignments are the kind you can really sink your teeth into. But that wasn't what our friend the barista was talking about. He reminded me of my college creative writing course days, when the path to success stemmed from being brilliant in class. Everybody loved your work. And then your prof contacts a friend with his, a Random House or some other publisher, or The Atlantic. And they're beating down your door just because you won an award for best in fiction with your campus literary magazine. I did that. I won the award in 1997, Best in Fiction. That's as far as it went. Nobody was begging for me. What else I had? It doesn't work like that. The literary magazine field is saturated, normally reserved for either really amazing talent or people in cohorts who are helping each other rise to the top. Either way, it's not exactly freelancing either. Freelancing is the job, rather than the creative process of writing as art. At the end of the day, when the writing that feels more like a job takes all of your energy, and you sit and watch hockey to relax, and you eat your bowl of soup, and try to put calories back into your brain and switch gears away from something else, there's sometimes not a lot left for the writing you'd love to do. The book you write calls out to you. It becomes self-care. Not only is it your passion, but it also becomes your companion sometimes. Writers spend a lot of time alone. It takes focus and concentration, and sometimes your book looks like you have a neglected girlfriend, wondering when you're going to spend time with her for once instead of being at work all the time, or you're too tired to do anything with her when you get home. Freelancing is a skill that you pick up doing something else you love doing, and you can pick up some money doing it. Sort of like a professional rock climber who teaches kids how to climb the rock wall at the rec center for gas money. So no, Mr. Barista, freelancing isn't what you described. It is rewarding, because even the worst copy I have to write beats 19 years of sitting behind a desk at the university. But it's not what you think it is. It takes a lot of energy, it can be monotonous, exhausting, and often gets looked at like something just anybody can do. The tricky part is to keep writing what you want to write, and making time for it, not losing your voice for the stories that call out to you in the middle of the night. It's easy to lose sight of the work. But when there's temptation of the job offering you some money, if you just keep picking up clients and assignments, like anything, it's a balancing act. You can lose your soul. I wonder if that guy is still serving coffees, or if he has to put his big toe into the real world of freelancing yet. It's cold water. I would be shocked and astounded if he sold even a short story yet. If he has, then good on him. Otherwise, he's in for an awakening. If he can keep loving working with the written word after that, he might just have a shot at doing something he loves to do. It's hard, but it is worth it when you can do it. So here's a status update. Lately, I've been busy with freelancing. The end of the year slump seems to be breaking, and work is beginning to come in again at a slow trickle. The book has been going well enough, and unfortunately, by the time I have thoughts to write in my regular blogs, I decide that they'd rather serve me better as being episodes of this podcast. But the podcast, as of late, has become very heavy with writing dispatches. In the dead of winter, in this mountain wonderland, I've been working a lot more from home. The descriptions of the area around me are pretty much limited to, it's fucking cold and all the roads to camping and hiking are slammed with several feet of snow until May. My funds are limited to traveling right now, but winter is a good time of year to focus on building what you can instead of dreaming about what you can't. It's a great time to work on the book, make plans, and build up my funds again. Whatever that looks like. Also, I've been fixing stuff around the house. Just the other day, I fixed a leaky faucet. I've been doing a lot of reading, too. I discovered thrift books, where you can buy cheap, used, and out-of-print books. I'm not an affiliate, but I would rather support them than give Jeff Bezos any more of my money. The other day, I picked up a copy of Strunk and White, and Anne Lamott's book on writing called Bird by Bird. And I also got a copy of Bill Bryson's Notes from a Small Island. All three of these books cost about $20, with shipping. As a writer, I don't really read as much as I should, but I'm hoping to change that this year. One of the best pieces of advice I picked up was from Anne Lamott, and her thoughts on perfectionism. She says perfectionism is the voice of the oppressor, and that it will ruin your writing. I agree. Some of the hardest times I've had on my book lately have been trying to write it perfectly in the first draft. A lot of the problems I have with this podcast and my reluctance to publish new episodes come from the fact that I really hate having to back up and re-record stuff that I flub up. I have to allow myself the freedom to make mistakes, to play with the words. That's where all the good stuff comes from, the poetry, not from puking out some polished prose that I hope some editor will look at and spontaneously ejaculate as they are searching for a pen to write me a big fat advance check. It's not happening. So why am I writing with that expectation? I have to give myself permission to write a lot of garbage, and I have to have the patience to try to sift through it for the story that wants to be told. Lately, I've been kind of struggling with my mortality. I'm 47 years old, and I do understand that I have a lot more years behind me than I do ahead of me. How many books do I have in me? How many years do I have to tell those stories? The longer you wait to write something perfect and wait for the perfect moment or be the writer that you think can actually do it, you're wasting your time. The only time to do it is now. You have to sit down, you have to do the work, and it's going to suck. The first draft is going to suck. That's what extra drafts are for. So, this is a good exercise for me to just sit down and record what I want to say. And most of this tonight was done in one take. I backed up a couple of things where I screwed up things, like I said Boyd, like I was Bugs Bunny. And so I had to re-record that. But I don't know. I think a lot of this is just relaxing and just letting this be fun. Letting this be a conversation and not a showcase of how brilliant I am. Like I said, it's kind of like the expectations that you have in a creative writing course in college. You think that you're going to be scouted, you know, like the movies where they always say, oh my gosh, this guy is the next, you know, whatever, you know. Can't remember the name of the guy that wrote Catcher in the Rye. That's always the big go-to one. The guy wrote one book that anybody remembers and everybody clings onto that. I never even finished the book. Couldn't stand it. So anyway, that's it for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm going to record a couple more episodes, and then you can binge them, just like Netflix. So, be kind to yourself, write good stuff, write terrible stuff. But if that's really what your passion is, go to it. Fight for it. We don't have that many days on this planet. You might as well do something you love to do.